Hello, and welcome to Millennial 2017, number 36. And this is with Jean-François Garipi. I think most people will know who he is. He's a YouTuber and a scientist, biologist, and psychologist. Or your intro into those subjects, at least. And, why don't you introduce yourself to anyone who doesn't know?
Yes, I'm Jean-François Garipi. I'm an academic who left brick and mortar academia because I preferred continuing my teachings on YouTube. It's more efficient, it's less driving, it's less costly, socially costly, and you can get your words across to everyone who wants to listen to them. So I switched for a career in YouTube, and I've been very happy since then. I still continue my work as a teacher, but in a space that is not the space of that students are in, where they need to do an exam. I'm teaching on YouTube, and a lot of my videos revolve around understanding science, understanding how we know things. And I would say that I'm essentially giving a course of epistemology, but instead of within a class, I do it within reality. And so a case that has occurred within the last few months, I'm sure you've seen a lot of that. It's the interaction with Kraut, where we discuss about race realism. The reason I'm interested in this is not just because race is an interesting construct, it's because it's a perfect example of subject where there will be controversy, and then teach, okay, how is it that we know that genes are clustered in human population? Why do we know that IQ is somewhat of a good measure? So that's the kind of things that motivate me in the end. It's a course about how we know things and about science.
Right. Now, when did you start your YouTube channel? Because I wasn't aware of you until this whole Kraut thing started. And actually, not even at the start of that, because you weren't there when the whole Rage After Storm thing happened. But
I wasn't in the scandal of the Rage After Storm. I just learned about it, and now I really want to make a video about her because I quickly watched her video, and I can certainly say that she's been strumming a lot based on a lot of the things that I've heard people criticizing her. I don't think her video was as bad as people make it to be. I want to look at this in detail. Now, I've been a YouTuber way before this. I think I've been starting YouTube around 2014, 2015. And my first appearances were on The Drunken Peasant, where I was talking about science, I was talking about creationism, atheism, the evolution of life. And I also did a series on YouTube called NeuroTV, which was a very highly technical series where we were talking with some of the greatest neuroscientists of our time. Two of our guests were Nobel Prizes in physiology and medicine. And so we were really talking about to the best scientists in the world currently about where they were at in developing their methods and their understanding of their discipline. So I'm a whole YouTuber. It's just that people in the alt-right think that I'm in since the Kraut thing, but I've been having many lives on YouTube.
Yeah, yeah. Was it accurate for me when I to describe you as a psychologist?
Yeah, because after my studies in neurobiology, so I worked on fish neurobiology, mostly neurosurgery and patch clamping in fish brain. So at that point, you would call me more of a neurobiologist. But then I moved on to monkey research at Duke University, and that's where I've applied techniques of cognitive psychology to monkeys. And in fact, I've also done experiments in humans. Because even after the Duke experiments on monkeys and humans, I've moved on to private research, where I've done genetic research on patients who have schizophrenia, depression, or anxiety. And we were doing genetic research to see if some of their genes could predict their response to some medications. So as part of this, I've done a lot of psychology testing.
Right. Okay. Well, I think you and I both want to talk about the Kraut thing, and I think the audience definitely want us to talk about that, because we've both been quite heavily involved in this. Now, let's tell it as a sort of story. If we go back to the start, And, you know, this all really revolves around the character of Crichton T. He seems to be his psychology seems to be the driving force here. And by the way, I do not want this to be an attack on him. I don't want anyone to see this as an attack on him. This is a sort of mid-clusterfuck review of the events so far and discerning what we can about the main players or the main player. But I certainly don't want this to seem like an attack because I've got no interest in attacking him at this stage. In fact, I never did want to attack him, honestly.
Yeah, it's important to note that since the developments of the last 24 hours, Crichton T has now left the internet. Based on my communications with him, I would say it's unlikely that he will come back, or if he comes back, it might be just for talk with special friends like Sargon, but I don't expect him to come back to a full-time YouTube career anytime soon, and in fact, probably ever. He probably never will come back. So going back, for those who don't know the story, because what has unfolded within the last few months is really a big chunk of internet history and an important pivotal point for how we do videos on YouTube. So for many years, we could regroup a lot of the YouTubers under the category the skeptics. All right, they were doing skeptical videos debunking creationists, debunking stupid claims, and then the skeptics are some of the skeptics, or at least some who don't necessarily self-identify as skeptics, but they were referred to as skeptics, continued debunking videos about feminism, so about more social stuff, less sciencey stuff. Less scientific claims, factual claims, but more social claims. And Kraut was part of this development. And then Kraut decided, and this is something I ignored because I was making videos about totally different subjects, but Kraut decided to make a video against Rage After Storm.
Let me intervene at this stage. I think it's important to say that Kraut is a talented YouTuber. He was not just one of these many skeptics who make endless videos about SJWs and feminism. He also did videos. He clearly is concerned with Islam in Europe. He is concerned about, we should say he's a German, and in some senses he's a very stereotypical German. I think he's half English and half German. And some people say he's got Jewish blood. I don't know if that's true or not at this stage. But anyway, he was not just concerned with what I would call skeptic, low-hanging fruit. It was also quite serious videos about other topics, and his main one was the encroachment of Islam in Europe, which he approached from very much a civic nationalist perspective and, you know, cultural and religious. He saw Islam as a religious threat and a cultural threat, but not a genetic threat. He's not interested in that aspect of it, and indeed, as we discovered, he's very much allergic to that aspect of things.
Absolutely,
he's not a racial ethno-nationalist at all.
So he's one of those rare cases of a center leftist or straight out leftist who also are somewhat bigoted against immigration, but not. They don't make the full step toward what the right would do, which is simply to say. It's the immigrants that are the problem. For Kraut, it's not necessarily the immigrants, it's not necessarily their genes, and so he has to attack the culture, and so what becomes the problem there is the invasion by Islam. I would say that he's very much along the lines of Sam Harris on there too, because Sam Harris has been complaining against Islam, but he's not a right-wing nationalist of any kind. He's a leftist. And so they fall within the same category, in my view, as far as public intellectualism go and their position on immigration. So we have someone who internally is looking for civic nationalist-type justifications for his refusal of immigration. And so this leads him probably, and I suppose this is unconscious, or maybe it's conscious, but in any case, it leads him toward a crusade against race realism. race realism being, at least in my view, I don't know what's your view on race realism. As far as I defined it, race realism is the statement that races exist and that they are these genetic variations that produce these races are accompanied by phenotypical observable differences between these groups. Is that also the definition for you?
Yes, but also ethnocentrism, I think, is part of race realism. The understanding that people prefer to be with people who are racially like themselves.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it's true that I don't necessarily say that it's a necessary condition for race realism to be true, but I acknowledge that this is an observation we do in humans. I'm saying there could be other civilizations in which this is not the case, but as far as we know, yes, there is within race preferences in terms of sexual selection in humans that is broadly observed in all races. Yeah. So there I agree.
So what happened was that he was happily... he was happy doing what he was doing. And by the way, I know some people are worried that I'm going to go too easy on him here. I don't think so. I'm just trying to be factual. He made a video defending me when I was doxxed by the Daily Record. He made a video attacking the Daily Record. And he also, when he first became big, like a year before that, like at the start of last year, when he hit 30,000 subscribers, he was asking other people to do guest videos on his channel in order to publicize their own channels. And he offered me the opportunity to do that. I think I had 5 or 10,000 at that time. And so his channel rapidly grew at the start of last year. And he offered me to do that. But I didn't do it. I think it became clear to me that he was cultivating a civic nationalist audience and it just wouldn't be right. I didn't want to fuck him over because I didn't think that he was quite familiar with my channel and he was not making that offer with full knowledge of what the resulting video would be. So I didn't take him up on the offer. So anyway, he went ahead and happily did this civic nationalist stuff, moaning about Islam and so on. And he became very much one of the leading lights of the skeptic community at the lower level. He wasn't Sargon of Akkad and he wasn't Thunderfoot and he wasn't the Warsky brothers or something. But
he was almost there.
Yeah. And he was definitely getting there. He was approaching that.
Yeah.
So, and it was all going fine until a young woman turned up. She was 19. Rage After Storm was her channel's name. And she was making very standard skeptic videos. And she was a new darling of that movement, that community. Until out of the blue, she made a video about race realism. She just discovered it herself. She was going through that phase of rapid learning, rapid development of a worldview that happens when you're 19. And so she made this video, and the skeptics, well, why don't you take the story out from there, or do you want me to continue?
Well, I don't know that much about that part, but I will say just because you've mentioned your past with Kraut, I will also mention mine. When there was the Thunderfoot Sargon split of the skeptics community, I did a video where I was supporting Kraut and T and the whole gang of Sargon, saying they have nothing to apologize for. They made dark jokes, but it's fine, and it was within the limits of acceptability in my view. And so that was my first public statement on Kraut, which was one of support. It was preceding anything race realism. Now, if you can tell the story of Rage After Storm, and then I will chain about what happens after.
Okay, I've just remembered that there's actually an earlier stage to this that we should mention, which is that another skeptic who was friends with Kraut and T, Edgy Sphinx, he turned alt-right or whatever, pseudo-alt-right, and I think this happened around the end of last year, I think it was November, December last year, and Kraut attacked him for that, and I can't remember the details now, but it was like, well, this guy had turned heretic or apostate. So he had to be attacked. And it was a strange thing. And at the time, it seemed rather out of, it seemed too much. It seemed over the top. But of course, in retrospect, it was just a prototype for what was going to happen 6 months later with Rage Absolutely. After Storm. So that drove Edgy Sphinx off YouTube for a while. He came back as Braving Ruin, and he will be appearing later. Oh no, have I? I can't remember. He's in Millennial this year anyway.
And I think he's been on. Yeah,
yeah, he has been on. I remember now. And so, and in the meantime, things continued, and then Rage After Storm appeared. And then she did this video, and it was just the way it played out was that, if I recall correctly, was she had been on Andy Warski's channel, a one-to-one interview, sometime in May, and then she did this video sometime in June, and there was outrage from the skeptics, and then she was, and then Andy Warski did a stream with, I think, like five or six skeptics, one of whom was Crichton T, and the objective of this stream, this hangout, was to sort of reassure the skeptic community that what Rage After Storm had said was simply not true. She was completely wrong. It was just mad, and you shouldn't worry about it. And then they went through several claims that she'd made in the video, disproving them as they saw it. And it was very much an attack on her. And it was rather cruel. I found it disgusting at the time. And why don't you talk about the video that she made?
So the video, I've just learned about it. So this is something that I will be looking at in depth. I want to look at the entire behavior of the skeptic community in there. But for now, what I will say is that from my first few watches, there's clearly she's been strummed by a lot of skeptics. What she says in that video is not as stupid as how I've heard it described. I will reserve my judgment to say if she made single errors. I do not know yet. I will have to think about it a little more. I will have to look at her phrasing. But I can guarantee that this video is not completely ridiculous. And it's certainly not as ridiculous as it has been presented by many people. So that will be my judgment for now. But keep watching my channel and you'll see a video pop out very soon about this. I want to look at what was true in there, what was not true.
Right. I think it's important to say that it was her first foray into race realism. So, I mean, there will be inaccuracies, there will be, you know, bad sources or whatever. But the general thing was, well, it was a young person discovering this for the first time and being kind of, you know, amazed by it, because of course it was contrary.
And you can see in the video edition that this is just a pop YouTuber. She's not a scientist. She's doing jump cuts in the same way that you would see in a nail polish YouTube video. So it's not the video from which I expect technical scientific content, but still there, I don't think that even if she doesn't reach the level of a good technical explanation from a scientist perspective, I still think that her statements were not as wrong as represented. And in fact, I think I may have actually a hard time finding a single error in that video. I'm still looking for it, and I'll reserve my judgment for now. Now, moving on, because so then Crichton T starts his crusade against her and essentially wins, and he gets her out of the internet, from what I understand, right?
Yeah, it started with that stream, and yeah, to emphasize, I don't know if her sources were reliable or not. The skeptics made a big thing out of the fact that she'd used the Daily Stormer as a source. But I think that's the first sign we have here that they're not actually interested in the truth. They're interested in smearing people by association. Well, the Daily Stormer, they're extremists, so they can't possibly be right. You know, that's not scientific, and it's not logical or objective. It's just poisoning the well, which is a phrase that has become associated with Kraut.
Oh God!
after the infamous Naked Ape thing, but that's jumping ahead. So what happened then was people were outraged by the treatment of Rage After Storm by these skeptics. I think it was, I can't even remember who was all in that stream. And then, but Kraut, because he'd come onto that stream as the sort of academic, he came in for the most heat. And he didn't like that at all. And he then he reported her to her, I think it was a UKIP blog, for which she did some work. And it wasn't a job, but it was something, it's something that could have led to a job. I mean, it was experience. It was something that she was doing in her life, you know, in the world at large. Mm-hmm. And he reported her to them, and they dropped her as a result. It looks like it was a result of his doing that. And it just was nuts. There was no need for him to do that. It was just petty and vindictive. And then when he got heat for doing that, and I think it took a month or so for it to become clear that he had done that, then he put up a video called Artificial Outrage, in which he called her a little Nazi bitch queen. And it was just vitriolic. It was just horrible.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah.
Yeah, and I think that was when he then decided, because that video got him, again, lots of heat from the alt-right. And then he decided to go on his crusade against the alt-right. And he said that he was going to make videos debunking the various claims that the alt-right make. And he was going to start with race realism. So that brings us to his series.
Yeah, and now with some historical perspective on that moment, which was, 4 months ago approximately, I don't know exactly, we can look at his Skype message that he just sent me yesterday, and it gives us insight on how he felt at that moment. Because I sent him a message yesterday when I saw that he was deleting his entire YouTube channel, and my message was, "Hey, crowd, just letting you know, take the time to breathe. And let me know if you need to talk at any moment. I'm sorry for what you had to go through." And his response is, "You know, I took it too personal from the start." And I think that when he says the start here in his response to me, he's talking about that moment where he started the crusade against the alt-right. I think that from that moment, he was just pissed off at the alt-right and he wanted to destroy them all.
Yeah, I think that he saw the alt-right as a threat to the skeptic community, because the fact is that for a lot of people, the skeptic community is a phase that they go through. It's like it's that sarcastic, clever, smug phase that you'll go through in your teens or your early 20s, and then eventually you realize, actually, life is a bit more serious, and you might well gravitate to something to the alt-right, basically. And I think he knew that's my supposition here. I think he knew that the alt-right was a serious alternative to the skeptic community. Now, I'm not saying that the alt-right is perfect or anything like that, but it is more serious than the skeptic community. And so the existence of the alt-right is a sort of affront to the skeptics, because it shows them up for being lightweight, insincere, and not objective, like they claim to be. So I think Kraut sort of sensed that, and that's why he was hypersensitive to the alt-right criticizing him.
I would specify a little bit your description personally, and I would say what the alt-right has that the skeptic community doesn't have is a moral position, a political positioning. And when you think about it, anything that you're going to do in society will be pulling your society toward the left or the right economically, and toward authoritarian or libertarian on the axis of liberties. And the problem of the skeptic community is that, we're based around factual observations of the world, but you don't have a moral basis on which everyone could agree, and therefore your community is so diverse that you have people who are willing to fight together within your community to bring the world one way or another. I would say that's another advantage of the alt-right with respect to the skeptic community as it was, let's say, laid out by Richard Dawkins when he stated, I'm going to advocate for militant atheism. Militant atheism is neither right nor left. And so you're still left with an untaken moral position, which is the alt-right resolves this by saying we are on the right and we are identitarians.
Yeah, the skeptic community is basically just forever sitting on the fence, be skeptical. That's not a position, that's an attitude. And it's an attitude. It's an attitude that you use probably temporarily. You don't go through life constantly being skeptical about something. If it, you know, being skeptical is a means to arriving at a safe conclusion. It's not an attitude that you carry with you throughout your entire life, because if you do that, it's basically just a defense mechanism against ever making a decision and nailing your colors to the mast.
Oh yeah, because even the skeptics, you will realize when they talk about politics that they are skeptic about what they want to be skeptic about, and they are not so skeptic about other stuff. And so it's clear that any skeptic will have its own political preferences, and he will approach problems with certain sets of preference that will predetermine the outcome. I know of no one who would suggest that a scientific experiment could find the answer to the question, should I want my son to be homeschooled or should he be schooled in the public school? Because ultimately, no matter what the statistics you want to gather, ultimately it's a question of value and preference. You're going to have to apply your moral interpretation to these facts that you gather.
Yeah, exactly. You could be skeptical about homeschooling and skeptical about about state schooling. It doesn't really get you it doesn't get you anywhere, really.
Yeah.
It's just an attitude.
So there we are a few months ago, and Kraut starts his series against the alt-right. And probably out of an import from his method doing videos on other subjects, like feminism or like immigration, he starts very aggressively by the title, "The Alt-Right is Too Dumb for the Alt-Right is Too Dumb for Science, The Alt-Right is Too Dumb for Physiology, The Alt-Right is Too Dumb for Biology." Do you think that the choice of title here has influenced a lot of the reaction to that series?
I think not so much. I think it just it's a signal of what the video is going to be like. It's a signal of the tone that he has adopted. The title itself is insulting, but I think that people in the alt-right, they're not going to get all excited about it. A mere insult like that. The reason it was annoying to them is that they correctly guessed that, okay, he's just out to find us wrong on things. He's just out to prove us wrong, and he's out to mock us without, and this was the thing, it was without really knowing. You know, he doesn't really know. He's just decided beforehand that we're wrong. So he went into this project to prove us wrong, and that was it.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, it's not so much, to me, the titles were not offensive in terms of insulting. To me, the titles, what they cause as a problem is that they set a threshold for him. Now, he doesn't need to demonstrate that, oh, there are some interesting blurry questions around the alt-right. If you start with a title like this, you need to demonstrate that the alt-right is totally beside the track. And to me, that's setting a bar that he couldn't meet. And so that's where I see the problem with this title, not in terms of the insult, but in terms of the threshold and the bar that he sets for himself. And as I review his videos, I will tell you that it influences a lot, because every time I review a sentence in the video, I go back in my head, what is the main thesis? The main thesis is the alt-right is too stupid for X, Y, Z. And so all I have to do, if I review with that threshold of evidence, all I have to do is to prove that, well, first, the alt-right was right about what they were stating about biology, and secondly, that he's actually making more errors than the alt-right as he talks about this subject. And therefore, the main thesis of the video is rejected because the guy who's accusing the other side of being stupid has actually demonstrated that he was making more error. That, I will tell you, influences a lot the way I construct my videos about it, my response videos.
It shows that he's going into this with that attitude. And after he's done it with the first video, he has to do it with any subsequent videos that he does. And he did. I mean, I can find the titles just now. It was so ridiculous. And what happened? The alt-right are too dumb for sex. The alt-right is too dumb for genetics and maths. The alt-right is too dumb for genetics and physiology. The alt-right is too dumb for quantitative genetics. I mean, this is just ridiculous. It's not even respecting your opponent. It's taking a very childish attitude of, well, just calling your opponent stupid. It's just silly.
So I start reviewing these videos personally because I've been talking about the subject of race realism for a while. I'm surfing on that wave. I was not aware that Kraut was going to start something, but I've always been responding to small videos like this. I've talked to Uzalu on a live stream about race. I've talked to Destiny about it. And so I'm like, okay, let's review this new series. And I find it was like a chest of gems. It was like the memes were writing themselves. It was errors that were so funny that it was actually stand-up comedy just reviewing the scientific content of these videos. And I cannot believe the number of memes that have emerged from my detection of some errors, including pregnant trouts, retarded mice, the fish fallacy. There are so many basic errors that it becomes funny. Was that how you were seeing that those first episodes as they were coming out?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a scientist, and I will not pretend to be well educated in these matters. But even I mean, the first one was about RK selection theory, and as I was. As I said in my response video to it, he was claiming that the alt-right use RK selection as an absolute category, and we don't. And also he was claiming that we use it as a sort of scientific category when we don't. It's an approximation. It's just a heuristic. It's nothing more than that. And it really, at its heart, it's just a shorthand for a collection of behaviors. So that's all. You know, it's just a debating tool. It's just something that you will invoke in order to get a point across quickly. That's all. That's how I've used it. And so to claim that we're using it as some sort of scientific thing is just not true. But he did that so as to say that it's not scientific, so you're wrong. You know, setting us up, straw-manning us, basically.
Yeah, so he commented the continuum fallacy in that video. I've explained in my response video, look, the RK selection model, it's just one of the trade-offs that the life forms are facing. It's a reduced model. Of course, there's not going to be a full model that represents everything that life forms face, or else the model would essentially be a physical simulation of the universe. So no, of course, any mathematical model you do is a toy model of reality. And that's why they're fascinating. That's why they're useful, because they're quick IDs that you can isolate from the other IDs. You can kind of remove the pollution that happens in the real world with everything. And you say, okay, if I just think about the trade-off between many babies or a few babies with lots of parental care, what can I get from there? And you can get a lot of things. And you can discuss about hypotheses on the public space and you should not be ridiculed for raising an hypothesis such as, hey, maybe a certain race of humans has more R tendencies than K tendencies in humanity. This is not unreasonable. And if Kraut wanted to prove that unreasonable, a good video would have been, look at the birth rate of various groups. It could be ethnic groups, it could be religious groups, and show me that the birth rate don't differ, or that the investment in parental care is the same all across. Of course, what you would find is that no, there are huge differences in the number of babies produced per family in each ethnic group, in the care that is invested, in the amount of time that children stay with their parents, in the age at which they attain the liberty to choose a mate. These things vary across human races, human ethnicities, and cultures. So no, you're not gonna end up finding that humans are a flat K, all equal species. No, we vary within our species about how much we invest in parental care and how much we invest in producing multiple offspring. So that was... Yeah, go ahead.
One thing I would say about this is that the attitude that he took towards RK selection was one of destroying avenues of exploration. And I think that, again, is telling. It's like he wants to not just not discover the things that he might discover, he also wants to destroy the tools by which he might discover these things. Like, he'll destroy the torch that you would use to shine down that dark alley, you know, so that, oh, we don't need to know about that. You know, it's showing an incredible lack of curiosity.
I've been working very hard for the last year, even before the crowd thing occurred, to work on the concept of things that are possible. Some things are possible, some things are certain, some things are hypothetical, but they are plausible. And to explain that to people, you cannot laugh at someone for raising possibilities. That is, as you mentioned it, the mechanism by which we invent future theories. We have to raise the possibility first. And at first it might sound weird, it might sound too complex, but sometimes you raise a possibility and then you discover that it is the case. And I've seen a lot of people trying to mock the alt-right for raising possibilities, but we should never do that. If your hypothesis is not contradicted by some basic elements of reality or something we already know, then it is a valid hypothesis. And it should not be laughed at or rejected the way Jeff Holliday did on The Drunken Peasant when we talked about it, or the way Kraut did in his video series. This is, as you mentioned, it's anti-scientific. Anti-progress.
Yeah, it's like you can only... I mean, with the attitude that they're showing there, you could only propose a hypothesis if you already knew that it was probably true. Yeah. You know, if it already flowed directly from our current knowledge. Well, that is not... That's not a good attitude. It's not a productive... Yeah. Or it's not a creative attitude. So it's... Again, it just shows this lack of curiosity. Now, I don't know if that's just the way Kraut is, and that he just lacks curiosity. I don't think it is, because as I said at the start, he did make good YouTube videos, which required research and all that. But what I would think, what I would assume, is that this particular area of possibility was very frightening to him because he is German, and they are totally loaded with guilt about World War II. So, I mean, anything which goes in that direction, they're going to react to with an allergic reaction. I think he's very stereotypical in that way.
And by the way, I want to mention, we're going to go through the whole Kraut story, and I want to mention, this is one of the YouTube fiascos on which we have the most anthropological data. We know where Kraut went wrong, and we know the backstory of why he went wrong. And so for this first video, I would say that the responsibility lies in part on him and in part on the scientists that he consulted. Because as you mentioned, Germans are really filled with guilt with respect to World War II. And he consulted German academics. And I would not be surprised that these German academics were already reticent to any application of RK to humans. We also know that Kraut has recognized on the public space that he received text from these academics, but he modified these texts without showing them back to the academics. And in modifying the text, he's introduced a lot of errors in the phrasing, because the phrases were probably valid the way the academics were giving it to Kraut, but Kraut modified them so that they were more for a broad audience, but by modifying them, didn't realize that he was stating false stuff. So I would say that's the evidence for errors that we have, for the causes of the errors in the first video. Now, Kraut didn't step back. He moves on to race realism.
Well, it's important to say first that there were several response videos were made to that by Alternative Hypothesis and by me. And I think there was a third one, but this set up a pattern whereby Kraut would make one of these videos, and then there would be a set of response videos to it from the alt-right. So there we go.
Oh yeah, and now everyone was waiting for, I can't wait for Kraut to publish a video so that I can watch the Millionaire Wars video or the JF video or the alt-type video. People were getting very enthusiastic about these response videos because there was a lot of crap to debunk, and so it was fun. So he moves on to his second video, which is race realism, which essentially will now occupy the rest of the series. It seems that race realism is at the heart of all the videos after starting with the second. And so in his second video, race realism, what was his main point? He started with, was it the relation with IQ video, or it was a separate one?
Hold on, I'll just refresh my memory because
let's look at which one.
I've got it in my Crowtronic Woes folder.
Oh yeah, you deleted all his videos, so I don't know.
The alt-right is too dumb for genetics and maths, but I don't know.
Yeah. Is it possible that it was about sex?
Let me see. I think this was about the. Oh God! Hold on a second. This is about the existence of race itself. And then I think the third one was about IQ. I believe.
I'm trying to find my response video to it.
Yeah. So the second one, Too Dumb for Genetics and Math, that's about the existence of races.
Yeah,
and of course, I mean, for us in the alt-right, this kind of thing is just tedious because it's basically it's a set of arguments that we've heard 1,000 times in Facebook comment threads, and they're just stupid.
Yeah, and one of the main arguments in this is not biology, this is sociology, which is an absolutely invalid argument for anything. There's not a situation in academia or in science where you would want to reject something for being from another field. If the data from another field proves or disproves your point, it is relevant and it is data, therefore you should consider it.
Yeah, but again, it's just another way of rejecting things that raise possibilities. You know, it's another way of cutting off avenues of exploration. And Kraut had that attitude throughout this series, which, again, it doesn't reflect well on him, and it doesn't bode well for him either.
Absolutely. And then Kraut moves on with another video where he's asking, now he's detailing his claim that these studies that establish the existence of races are sociological and not biological, and he moves on to a more specific claim, which is that we should get molecular evidence, and specifically even protein expression assays, to understand how genes influence behavior before we make any statement about race, which is a complete nonsense. And I don't think that at that point Kraut knows that it is nonsense. The evidence that we have is that he, at that point when he does the third video, he is in contact with people who are undergrad students in chemistry and biochemistry or biology. And these people are ideologically driven. And we can see how Sandre acts with him because we now have the recordings of the discussions that lead to this kind of video. And we can see that the scientists that Kraut has chosen are highly ideologically motivated, and they are the one introducing ideas in Kraut, such as the idea that molecular genetics and protein analysis are needed for establishing heritability, which may be the biggest error of Kraut to think that.
Yeah, that was the first that was an example of extreme spergery, for want of a better word. This yeah. idea that you have to find the gene before that causes something before you say that that thing is real. This is just crazy.
And this emerges from a straw man that they make with Kem Savant, who is one of the scientists participating to this video. And this Truman alternative hypothesis, because alternative hypothesis is kind of a science educator. That's how I look at him. And on his website, of course, he's going to talk about the genes that were found that relate to intelligence. But the straw man that Kraut does in that part is to think that because he speaks of the gene, he believes that these are the most solid studies linking race and intelligence, when in fact alternative hypothesis recognizes in that very article on his website that currently the molecular genetics of intelligence is not very advanced, and it's not the best tool right now to establish heritability of IQ, and certainly not heritability of IQ across races. So this leads to an important answer by me and by alternative hypothesis, because this leads to the alternative hypothesis answer, which is titled something along the lines of Dunning-Kruger kid denies quantitative genetics. Because at that point in the series, we have solid evidence that Kraut is simply denying the existence of a whole set of studies that include twin studies, which are currently the best tool to establish if a trait like IQ, intelligence, is environmental or genetic.
Yeah, I mean, how else are you going to determine what a gene does except by analyzing how people differ and how the gene differs within them? In an event, you are going to have to start by making those basic common sense observations.
Absolutely. And one thing we need to tell to people who are not used to that kind of literature, let's say you're a molecular geneticist and you can go in a single gene in the genome and you can modify it and you can see its effect on an animal. That's one thing we can do in animals. We cannot do it in humans. We cannot modify humans for experimental purposes. This in and of itself does not give you a big window on the link of causality between genes and IQ or cognitive behavior or any behavior you might observe on the animal. The reason is it's a single gene and you have about 10,000 genes in your body or tens of thousands of various genes. And all of these genes, they can influence each other and they can have additive effect, but they can also have nonlinear effect. Having that gene with that gene with that other gene with that other gene might lead to super intelligence, but you just miss one of these genes and suddenly you're just average intelligence. So because of these nonlinear effect, working on single gene and single protein will never really give you a good idea of the genetic contribution of the contribution of genetic variability to variability in intelligence. So that's why we use twin studies, because the twins, they have 100% of their genome, which is the same when they are monozygotic twin, or they have only 50% when they are dizygotic twin. And so this gives you a big sample, because in one case, the two twins have exactly the same genome. All of the genes are all the same. In the other case, you have 50% of genes that are shuffled. And so this gives you a much better view into the causality between genes and IQ than a super microscope with a super knockdown molecular analysis tool would give you in a rat, for example.
Right, so, okay.
So that was the big error, and it was the big killer, because Kraut repeats for 30 minutes in this video that we need the physiological evidence, we need the molecular evidence, when in fact we don't. And he's not even going to realize this in his fourth video, which is the reply to the alternative hypothesis.
Yeah, and this one was another one where he went on and on about molecular analysis being the only valid way to establish any truth about genetics.
And now that we have the leaks of the discussions that have preceded the production of these videos and the reaction to the reaction of these videos, we know that there are scientists like Sandre who are fooling Kraut in the back. They are claiming that you do need the molecular genetics to understand heritability. It's people like Sandre, who are YouTube educators of small channel, from what I understand, they don't apparently understand that molecular genetics is not necessary. And we find ourselves having Kraut misrepresenting an author in this video, which is Robert Plomin. And he misrepresents Robert Plomin as asking for molecular genetic to demonstrate heritability. When I've read the entire book and there's no such statement, I confirm that this book, Behavioral Genetics, that is quoted by Kraut, does not state what Kraut was saying. So on the human side here, I will point out that we are at a point where Kraut is getting a lot of thumbs down at that point. His videos are more than 50% dislike. There's lots of comment, very extensive, people who understand the science who say, Kraut, you are wrong. It must be quite hard at this point. I don't know if you have any insight on Kraut at that moment. I think you tried communicating with him somewhere along that moment. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, I sent him many messages, but I think he just doesn't trust me or just doesn't like me. Or maybe he thought there was no point talking to me about it because I'm not a scientist. So I don't know, but for one reason or another, he just rejected every advance that I made. So I couldn't get through to him.
That was my experience with him too. At one point, he wanted me to be a reviewer on this whole series. But at one point, he totally disconnected from me, and it was radical, and there was no possibility to talk, and he didn't accept any message from that point on. So we are at a point where Kraut is getting ridiculed for several mistakes, from the very detailed mistakes that don't change much to his overall story, up to the major mistakes that are literally compromising his entire thesis at that point. At that point, it's clear that the videos are very low quality, that even if they've been made with the help of students, we find in the records of these students interacting with Kraut that some of them will actually admit that they haven't looked at the original alternative hypothesis video to which they are responding. So what you have here is a kind of a group of people who no one is really responsible. It's like Kraut is asking them, oh, why don't you do me a 2-minute video on Western blots? And so the scientist is like, okay, I can talk about Western blots. Now Kraut takes this 2 minute, plugs in into his response to Altype, and then the scientist doesn't realize, because he doesn't even review the final product, the scientist doesn't realize, for example, that the 2 minutes he spends talking about Western blots, which is a technique in molecular biology which allows you to separate proteins, is not even what Altype was illustrating in his original video. And so you have a kind of conspiracy of errors here, a kind of error in the coordination between the people rather than an error that anyone can really own.
Yeah, this could be a failure of organization, or perhaps a failure on Kraut's part to delegate properly or to trust people properly as much as he needed to. Or it could be that the scientists themselves are just being lazy. Now, I say scientists, the students are just being lazy. But either way, it resulted in increasingly long videos and increasingly mistake laden videos.
Yeah.
And very
and
smug.
Very smug.
Yeah.
Because when Sandre comes in, it's much more smug than the approach that were present in the first video.
Yes, definitely. When it was doctorant, and so on. And the other thing I'd say about this is that, and this is something that's important to note along the way, is that each time Kraut made a video, it was very swiftly debunked by Ryan Falk, by Alternative Hypothesis. So, and that was bad enough when, with the first one, when I don't know how long he'd spent making that, but by the third one, he'd spent 2 months making that one. Yeah. You know, he spent 2 months making that third video or researching it. And then it was debunked within a matter of, I don't know, 24 hours by Ryan. Yeah. It was something like that.
And the hilarious thing is to look at his Twitter at that moment, because he's like, I'm doing lots of research. Look at my look at the length of my reference list. So even before publishing the video, he's creating this this illusion that he has the references and he's read them all, and yet he gets debunked by, he gets proven wrong on all sorts of things by someone within 24 hours. And because my videos are more technical, it took average 5 or 6 days for me to answer, but that's because they address every point, so they're longer to prepare. But yeah, the response was super fast and always on point.
Yeah, and of course that makes a nonsense out of this process that Kraut had set up for creating each video. You know, with these scientists, researchers. I mean, it's a shame, because quite a lot of effort clearly went into making each of his videos, and yet it was a process, a creation process that simply did not work.
And I think that Alternative Hypothesis has put the right words on this. You need a single brain to be in charge of everything. Yes, you can delegate if you need a specific information, but ultimately, if you're a YouTube creator and you don't understand the sentence, don't publish it. And Kraut didn't do that. He kind of trusted that, whatever these scientists are telling me, I should be talking about this, but he didn't realize that when you put this all together, it doesn't make sense. Some of the sentences are wrong to start with, but the kind of mix that you do with all of it is even worse, because first, there's lots of incompatibilities within this series. I mean, there are places where you see Kem Savant appear, and he's actually contradicting the point of the earlier video about races not existing at all, or the mathematics of races being dubious, because he comes in the third video and he states literally, yeah, there are differences between genes, between different populations, and some of it is due to evolution. So Kem Savant debunks the second video by the third video.
Oh, God.
So this is one thing that I actually didn't do, because I do sentence by sentence replies. I do not have the time to look in a more kind of open and umbrella way to say, oh, look at this. The statement 2 months ago contradicts the statement today. I would have loved to do it, but because of the format of my videos, I could not. But there were so many errors that it would, at this point, I would have reached 7 hours of just replying to Kraut. So I just let it go. All right. So now we move to the kind of the last month, because that was the last video of Kraut, right? The response to Alternative Hypothesis before the video of One Species. And so we find ourselves in a situation for the last month approximately, where there's more and more evidence that Kraut is looking to smear individuals. In particular, me, potentially Alternative Hypothesis, and potentially Coach Red Pill. Yeah. And the way we see it happen is that, and I've been one of the main targets for that kind of harassment, is that I wake up one day and there's 4 different streams on the internet claiming that I didn't do my PhD in the right time. I should have done my PhD in 2 years, but it took me 6 years. That must be because I'm lazy. And I was a lazy scientist. But these things appear so coordinated that to us, even at that time, 1 month ago, before we know anything about the crowd's activity in the background, it's clear that there is a sort of coordination between some of crowd's sycophant at that point to smear my reputation. Now, this thing has escalated within the last month up to last Friday, where some of the crowd sycophants were trying to claim that I support pedophilia, that I make love to women without their consent, which is not true, and I do not support pedophilia either. They try everything they can to smear my reputation. And one of them
This is amazing. I mean, this is just amazing. I think it's worth going into this because, of course, we've got to remember that these are people who claim to be objective, rational, logical, and concerned only for the truth. This is that's the spiel of the skeptic community. And so you've got to understand that they are not like that, and they actually do have an ideology. They claim not to have an ideology, and they claim to be objective. They're clearly not, and they do have an ideology, and it's some sort of radical egalitarianism. And therefore, when that ideology is threatened, they give up on facts and, you know, fair debate and so on, and they go for personal attacks.
Yeah, and earlier you were asking,
very revealing.
Earlier you were asking to Aydin, why would they target JF? Well, they target me because I have the knowledge to pawn them on every single sentence they've made for 4 months. It's like, if you can find an excuse not to listen to me, they would use it. And so that's why they went on this campaign where they were appearing on various streams. And that was at the time where we didn't have spies in the Discord server, so we didn't know the details of what was going on. But it was clear that there were attempts at doxing and smearing. Now, doxing, let's talk about it because it's been a subject for the last few days. We have very early evidence now that Kraut was engaged in doxing Coach Red Pill. And Kraut has now recognized via private message to me on Skype. He did so yesterday as he was deleting his YouTube videos or privatizing them at least. Kraut has now admitted that he was gathering private information on Coach Red Pill for the purpose of shaming him and for the purpose of isolating him, because he wanted to do a video about him and ridicule him. And so the personal information that was gathered include his first name, past love interactions, past business interactions, where some members of the business partnership have complained against him, so they made it look like there might have been fraud, although he's never been found guilty of fraud. And so at this point, we have evidence that Kraut was directly involved in the collection of information about Coach Red Pill because he's admitted it. But we know it from only yesterday.
Right. I think it's important to emphasize again, this is all a part of a crusade against the alt-right and against people who are not in the alt-right, but he associates them with the alt-right. And it's a crusade that he claimed was scientific and, you know, again, objective, logical, and rational, when in fact, and also it's a crusade that should not be personal. It should be about issues and facts and ideas. But in fact, it's not objective. The skeptics were triggered by it, especially Kraut, and it's not issue driven. Well, it is initially issue driven, but then when they can't win on that, they do go for the personal route for character assassination.
And just because we're jumping, it seems like we're completely jumping subject here because we've been talking about 4 videos and about the science in them, and now we're talking about doxing. So just to guide the audience here, it's because for the last month, there was evidence incoming, and we've had spies in the Discord server of Kraut demonstrating that they were planning to convert their video of that were only about science into smear attacks on personality. And this is now admitted by Kraut via private message to me.
One thing
so
that
what
I would
we have,
One thing I just need to point out, the very fact that that Discord server had channels named after people rather than issues is a dead giveaway.
Because if you create a Discord channel and you're interested in the race and IQ, well, okay, let's make a channel called Race and IQ. Let's make a channel called Does Race Exist at All? Let's make a channel called Is IQ Valid at All? I mean, you can do these things, but the Discord server they created, and this was created by Kraut Sandre, but by the way, not by Zef. This we'll get there, but this is a separate subject. But there was a scapegoating attempt by Kraut to put this all on a user named Zef. We have now evidence that this was really scapegoating attempt by Kraut, and that Zef was not responsible for setting up that server. So that server was set up with names. It was like Jean-François Gariepy. What do we know about him? Coach Red Pill. What do we know about him? So it was really targeted.
I have to point out myself as well, and even Blonde in the Belly of the Beast, who's, I mean, it's just ridiculous. But this is like anyone who, I mean, I don't know exactly how far she's, I don't think she's done anything directly about race, but she is clearly not a civic nationalist. Same with Brittany Pettibone and Coach Red Pill, and then me as well, and Ryan, Alternative Hypothesis, and Stefan Molyneux, and Richard Spencer. I mean, it's just incredible. So, and by the way, in the channel about me didn't have much in it, but all it did have was an attempt to smear me as an advocate of violence. So we can tell already that what's going on with these channels. You know, it's absolutely, they're trying to find ways to discredit people on personal matters, whether it's because, oh, he's advocated violence, or he's had bad business dealings in the past, or whatever. But it's got nothing to do with race realism or science.
So just to sum up the findings from this leak that has occurred a few days ago, so that people understand, this server is essentially a bunch of somewhat psychotic leftists, center leftists, extremists in the way they proceed, in terms, because they have a plan to coordinate attacks on personalities. And coordinate means what? First, coordinated gathering of information on these personalities, doxing, threats and intimidation. And so we've seen a few tweets and a few YouTube chat comments, one of them coming from Jeff Holliday, who is a leftist YouTuber, and one of them coming from Kraut NT, which were directed at Coach Red Pill, and which contained dog whistling, essentially encoded messages so that Coach Red Pill would understand that they know something about him that he wouldn't want to be out on the public space. They were very suggestive that, and very threatening, that they would release information about him if he continued criticizing the series, or if he continued criticizing them at all. So,
amazing.
So that was the... go ahead.
Well, it's like they're behaving like a mafia.
Absolutely. I mean, what we've uncovered is essentially a radical political group, but it's not radical in the sense of being on the extreme left economically. They're pretty much center left, but they are radical in their methods, and they have decided that smearing people was their goal. And so they also have, on top of the threats, the intimidation, and the gathering of information, they also have scheduled release of videos. So you get multiple YouTubers addressing multiple points of your response video. Now, this kind of failed because, and we're going to get to the interesting part of the story, because this all failed due to us revealing that this server existed and creating a big stir within it, and to the point of destroying Kraut and pushing him to abandon his channel. So
yeah, let's get there. Braving Ruin, I don't know how, but one way or another, he was given a lot of information from inside this server, and I knew that he was working on a video exposing it all. And then you did your live stream where you played audio that you'd procured from the server, and I don't know if you were in touch with Braving Ruin or not.
So the way it happens is that there was a spy, or a few spy actually, in the server of Crowd. They were starting to worry about what they were seeing, about this kind of smearing gathering of activity. And in fact, some of these spies were scientists, and they were scientists who were ideologically with Crowd. They wanted to help Crowd, but they were feeling very rejected because they were feeling that people like Sandre, who are scientists on the Crowd team, are really rejecting reality. Because they were like, guys, JF is right on that point. And they were not getting listened to. They were getting yelled at, not by Kraut. Kraut was kind of open in everything I've listened of him in this discussion. He wanted the new scientists to voice their opposition. But people like Sandre were just completely rejecting stuff that we know is true, that we know he shouldn't reject. And so frustrated with this attitude, with the attitude that they were getting from the Crowd team, they came to me and Braving Room. And they gave us the information that they had gathered up to some point. And now Braving Room was excited and he was like, okay, let's keep this information and let's let the spy continue the job. And personally, I was of the opposite opinion that the info that we had was enough to demonstrate what was the purpose of this server. It was clear from the server that they were targeted at smearing people. Personally, I was satisfied with the information. And so without even mentioning anything to the spy or to Braving Room, I've just decided I'm going to publish a part of the info. So I caused the first leak with this live stream that I did, where I play audio recordings of Kraut hilariously saying that he wants to gas the French as he listens to my video. And I found this hilarious, but also telling, because here's someone who is adopting an anti-race realist discourse on the public space, but in private, he refers to frogs, which is what he calls the French people. He says, we are frogs. And he says, these frogs can't understand. How do you want me to explain this to a frog? And so these are, at least as far as I'm concerned, I experience these as racial slurs against my race. And it's not that I object that much to them, but it's kind of contradictory coming from someone who's in a crusade against race realism.
Well, I mean, this is the thing about several things. You will get white people who make very disparaging remarks about other groups of white people, but then are outraged by any sort of racism against blacks or whatever. I mean, that happens. But one thing I would say is, I'm not convinced that this is racism on Crouch, but I'm not sure that he actually meant any of those things. It's one of those, I mean, he could have just been joking. You know, it's like, I know that they like edgy humor as well in the skeptic community. So I'm not convinced that he actually means it or meant it.
Definitely. And I want to specify to people, I've been playing the card of I'm gonna be offended by the racism of Kraut. It was an elaborate joke about how an SJW would react to such racism committed against certain groups. It was mostly a joke. But it was a joke that was pointing to a reality, which is that even if you do racist joke, if you're a white person, as you pointed out, people will judge you as racist. I mean, there are SJWs who argue in our society that doing a misogynist or racist joke is a form of misogyny or racism. And so I played the first degree interpretation that SJWs often do, but I played it in an hilarious way in defense of the French race. It was mostly a joke.
Well, one thing that I would point out also is that there, do you think, and this is just completely hypothetical, I'm just speculating, do you think that Kraut as a German has some genuine hatred for the French?
I mean, I think most people in Europe, most English people in the UK, they just dislike French to start with. French people just dislike Germans and UK people to start with. So I think this is very common. And I'm not alarmed by it. I'm not shocked by it. It's the same way we Québécois were annoyed by English Canadians just because they keep us from getting our independence. And so it's normal good neighbor annoyance,
yeah.
I would say.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
not something that alarms me. But I did play the card of it does annoy me and it's racism. So now, during these leaks, and this is where a spectacular character of this story appears, Zef, a guy who presents himself on his Twitter account as an extraterrestrial gray being. This guy sends me an email while I'm filming these audio leaks, revealing just funny stuff about Kraut and funny stuff about how the team behaved with their scientists, which actually reveals the whole list of errors. Why did they make these errors? We know why, because we know how they talk about these videos in the back and who commits the error. And it's often Sandry, who, in my view, based on the recordings that I've seen, is a very bad science educator. Very bad. Very incompetent. So during my release of these audio leaks, which I had done on my own, knowing that the spy was like, if you release now, you're going to blow our cover. I said, yeah, I'm going to release now. I don't care. I'm going to do it. So I released the thing, and Zef sends me an email with my personal address and, in fact, details of the physical location of family members that I love.
Oh, as my well God, as, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
That's disgusting.
As well as phone numbers of my relatives and my close people, the people who are most close to me. And so he essentially sent also his girlfriend to pay for a super chat, asking me to stop releasing the audio leaks, that I was violating criminal law, which I'm not, because I know journalistic law. And there's plenty of journalists who have been doing secret recordings, and it is absolutely legal to do so. And so they kind of make up this case where they have my information and they might just release my address to the whole world if I continue releasing the docs. Personally, this is not the kind of thing you're going to get me with. I'm beyond that level in my life. I'm at the level where I'm already actually prepared for my address. If it was to be revealed on the internet, I'm prepared to defend myself in my home if I'm getting attacked. That's the level at which I am. And I decided to do this years ago when I decided that I would be a YouTuber with my full name on the public space. I decided that it was my responsibility to be equipped to defend myself if someone enters my home or just comes close. So, so I didn't bend to that threat, but then I reported the threat on Twitter saying, look, this is blackmail. This is extortion. It's criminal activity. And it's by someone who is the direct right arm of Kraut. And in fact, as I was talking about this threat on the Andy Warski show, Friday, that's last Friday, Zef comes in with Kraut on the Warski show.
Oh,
and they
God.
Start having very belligerent behavior. Kraut was talking to Aidan Paladin extremely disrespectfully. For yes. a man-to-woman interaction, this was disgusting. Yes. He was telling her to shut up. And, I mean, Aidan Paladin was somewhat emotional, but that's not something you correct by yelling at her and saying shut up.
Well,
there's lots of people who were offended.
Yeah. And I think it's... I don't know if she would mind me saying this, but I think the reason she was emotional is that she actually is scared of Kraut because she thinks that he's not mentally normal.
Yeah. That's what she said, actually, on the show. She right. is scared of Kraut because from her recounting, and I don't have the facts of it, but let's say we believe her, and personally, she's always been a very sharp person, so I would tend to believe her. She seems to be saying that Zef has been whispering to her that he had information about her and that he could reveal her identity, which would not be surprising. Zef did it to me, and that I have published on Twitter the evidence for that. And so, so we have this very bad interaction on the Warski show. And anyway, I don't have a super microphone because I'm on a satellite and I'm lagging. So I didn't, I didn't intervene much in that discussion. I've just let the discussion go.
I think it's important to state that that Warsky stream, that was at the start of, I mean, that was when it was all really falling apart, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So we are during the moments where Braving Rune is starting not to do like me. I did a video on the funniest part of the audios of the league. Braving Rune starts tweeting every single info that comes from the leak of the Discord server of Kraut, clearly demonstrating at that point what I've been saying to you for 10 minutes, which is that this server was a server of doxing, of coordination of intimidation, and scheduling of attacks on personalities. So Braving Rune is just dropping one tweet per 10 minutes, and it gets 1,000 retweets and 1,000 likes. And it's like, here's the proof that Jeff Holliday was looking for information about Coach Red Pill. Here's the proof that Kraut was looking for XYZ. And so there's lots of names that are starting to get dropped at that point. There's lots of evidence that are coming. And this stays like this. And then Kraut releases a video, which is the video from One Species. It is a video made by another YouTuber that seeks to address my point. Now, this video has now disappeared because Kraut has left the internet. But essentially, the point of the video was to make it look like my scientific concept contradict the alt-right's conception of race, which is not the case, but he decided to go that way where he essentially says JF is right, but JF is right in a way that makes the alt-right wrong. And that's where he strawmans the alt-right, because he claims that the alt-right says that black people are R-selected and white people are K-selected, which I don't know. You may know more about the alt-right forums and the small speakers of the alt-right than me, but personally, I've never heard any speaker say that.
No. I mean, people will say, and I have said, because I do believe this is true, if we're going to use RK selection, if we're going to use those archetypes, then I think that sub-Saharan Africans, black people, are more R-selected because they exhibit more R traits than whites. Yeah. And the further north you go in Europe, the more K-selected they become in their behavior. So, I mean, yeah.
So your claim is a continuous one. It's one of statistics and of averages. The only way that this video by One Species would have worked is if your claim was absolute and you were saying, oh, really, black people have a different reproductive system and it's R-type in nature and you can change it, and white people have the K-type reproductive system. Whereas your statement is much more relative and much more across a spectrum of variability within huge populations.
Yeah, because I'm seeing.
All right. So I mean, this video...
This is the just kind of straw manning that they go in for. It's just stupid.
Absolutely. So this video, the One Species video, gets a dislike ratio that I think I've never seen, something like 70% dislike or 80% dislike. And it comes out, no one had the time to answer to it because there was so many release of leaked document at that point that I didn't have the time to start even thinking about doing a reply video to it. There was just too much information coming out at that point, incriminating Kraut in the doxing campaigns and the smearing of personalities. Now the big twist of the story happens yesterday. Yesterday, a sequence of events happened that is Romeo and Juliet type happening, all right? Just like the end of Romeo and Juliet, it's like you could not write a fiction that is as exciting as what happened yesterday. So let me try to lay it out, because it's the first time I explain it, but I lived through these events yesterday and I want to represent them correctly. So we have evidence that Zeph is the right arm of Kraut, that he's involved in doxing and threats. We have evidence that Kraut is involved too, but the evidence about Kraut is much less released. We have a little bit that we keep private. and this will play out later, you'll see. So, Kraut releases yesterday an apology video, which is not really an apology. I don't know, have you seen the apology video?
Yes, I saw it. It's like 2.5 minutes long, and yeah. It disavows Zeph, blames it all on Zeph, the doxing stuff, and says that the server was started purely for scientific research.
Exactly. So, the server has been started purely for scientific reason, but we have found that one user was, in fact, doxing people, Zeph. And he jumps on Zeph, and he puts all the blame on him.
Yeah, and I love it. It was very funny, the way he said it as well.
It's it was like, Zeph, like, I caught him. Okay, now, this was the crucial error, because Kraut publishes this video 30 minutes before I'm already scheduled to go live on Warski Live to talk about the whole drama. And as soon as he publishes the apology, I tweet something that says, I accept Kraut's apology. It looks genuine. I'm sure that he didn't have anything to do, at least as far as my case goes. The case where, because I know personally that the threat I've received was directly from Zeph. So as far as my case is concerned, I don't think that Kraut was behind all this. He might have been pulling the strings, but he's not the one who sent me the threat. It was Zeph. So I do a very positive tweet, but everyone in the community, and this is minutes before I go live to Warski Live, they send me tweets and they're like, no, JF, you're wrong. We have all sorts of evidence proving that that Kraut is lying in that apology video. So the lines of evidence are really stumping for Kraut. First is the fact that Zeph was only made an administrator of this server 3 days ago, the Friday night where we were all on Warski show. And so Zeph cannot have been planning all these doxing campaigns that had been going on for a month or two. So Zeph is not the right scapegoat. Just from the logs, it's clear that he was not involved in the creation of the structure of this Discord server and of most of the activity. The second is Zeph is now pissed off at Kraut, of course, because he doesn't want to be the scapegoat for this whole affair. So he sends me direct messages that he exchanged with Kraut, demonstrating that Kraut's apology is a lie. That when Kraut says, I didn't know that the server was for doxing purpose, I had made the server for scientific purpose, Zeph shows me direct messages by Kraut demonstrating that Kraut knew exactly that what this server was for, that it was for doxing people and for smearing their reputation. It's right there, and I've tweeted it. It's in the history of messages that he exchanges with Zeph.
It's also in the structure of the server itself. As I said before, the fact that they have channels dedicated to particular people, it can only mean that not necessarily doxing, but it's definitely going to be character assassination.
Absolutely. So I'm going live on Warski with this all new knowledge that the video apology released by Kraut 1 hour ago is actually containing lies. And so during the Warski show, I present these cases, and so I indicate, well, here Kraut is faced with lies that he's just been publishing on the public space, and there is just no way, based on the demonstration that we make here, there is no way that what he says is true. He's lying to his audience. And a few hours after I quit the Warski live show, the news come out that the videos of Kraut on his YouTube channel are starting to disappear. Kraut has been caught lying. He knows it. And he knows that the evidence clearly indicates that he was involved in doxing activities on Coach Red Pill. And he's also desperate about his scientific series, which is full of errors. And we see, one by one, the videos of Kraut disappearing from his YouTube channel. An entire chunk of internet history dissolving before our eyes. And within 20 minutes, all of the videos of Kraut are deleted on his YouTube channel, and 4chan starts celebrating the end of Meme War 2. This is what happened yesterday.
Yeah, but there's another thing that happened yesterday, which is that the... I don't actually know if this is confirmed, but basically, from what I understand, it was revealed, it was discovered that Kraut is he's into BDSM and he's a cuck. do you not know about this?
I mean, I know the information that's circulating about this. I've not taken stance on that information on the public space because I cannot assess its veracity.
Yeah. It would be very... I mean, it would add an entire other dimension to this. It adds up for me. I mean, you know, just on the basis of what I've seen of him, that this seems very plausible to me. That he, you know, he's got the whole obsession with Germany's Nazi past, and also he moans about Islam in his in these forum posts, and the whole thing about being dominated by a woman, and also that he's fine with his girlfriend sleeping with other men. I mean, this is all to do with self-hatred and inadequacy, insecurity, and a lack of masculinity. I mean, it all adds up.
I mean, it's an interesting hypothesis, but I don't take position on these because I've read them all. But I always, when I state something on the public space, I always ensure that I can verify the authenticity. And in these cases, I'm not sure I can verify the authenticity. I can absolutely state you with 100% certainty, however, that Zef is a cuck, a literal cuck. And in fact, I'm the guy who caused that, in the sense that his girlfriend was attracted to me and proposed to me to have sex, even if she was with him. But that didn't work. It was years ago.
Fucking hell. That's a, that's a plot twist.
He's the only cuck in that story that I can say 100% sure.
I doubt he'll be the only one, to be honest. even if Kraut isn't.
No, but I mean, you don't seem to be aware of the story, but Zef actually recognized publicly on a hangout that he accepts that his girlfriend sleeps with other men. That is literally what he said.
Oh, for God's sake.
And he said, well, I have more of an emotional connection rather than a physical connection with her.
Right, okay. Oh, God, the rationalizations. Yeah, he respects her. Yeah, because she wants that freedom and he's happy to give her. Yeah, whatever.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've seen some young people fall for this. It's very sad. I don't know what leads to this. Maybe it's society. Maybe it's the form of liberal societies we live in, or the concept of pleasure that is above everything, and the fact that marriage, the value of marriage has been plummeting. I don't know exactly what causes this. It seems to me that a good relation with a woman is always grounded in we belong to each other and we are loyal to each other.
Well, that's I don't know, that's not very logical or skeptical of you, to be honest.
So this was a very exciting last few days, I will say. This is one of the first cases where we have internal journalistic spying within what we could call the larger skeptic community. And it's the first time, really, that a group of radical skeptics on the internet like this gets exposed in its most detail, in the most detailed fashion, from the voice chat that they were hosting up to the coordinated release of YouTube videos. We have a full study here, a full case study, and the first one on how to create a YouTube fiasco. And just to finish that story correctly, I would like to read the full discussion that I had with Kraut, as I saw that he had deleted each video of his YouTube channel. So I've read a part of this earlier. I will repeat it. I said, "Hey, Kraut, just letting you know. Take the time to breathe and let me know if you need to talk at any moment. I'm sorry for what you had to go through." And he says, "You know, I took it too personal from the start." I say, "Yep." He says, "Have a happy Christmas. Oh, and by the way, I gathered the ducks of Coach Red Pill. I gave them to the Guardian." The Guardian being one of the guy who was somewhat of a leaker.
Yeah, not the
because I thought you would defend him. I thought you would defend Coach Red Pill. And he says, "Don't be too rough on those who worked with me." And I answer, "Come back when you feel like it. And don't forget to connect to the people you love, as we all should do for this Christmas season. And I have no hate for anyone who worked with you, nor toward you." And he says, "I don't know if I will come back. All the best to whatever you plan." And then he asks, "I have to ask, did you really have to take the recordings?" And I answer, "I didn't. It was a dickish move, but fair in the game that I play, at least according to my own morals." And he says, "Okay, so then you know what my responses would have been to your videos?" And I say, "I really don't know. It seems from the recordings that you were planning to really attack the scientific arguments, but I don't have details about it." And Kraut here realizes that it is worthless now. Kraut realizes that the arguments don't matter. He's abandoned his YouTube channel. And he states, "Oh, it's kind of worthless now, isn't it?" And I answer, "Yeah, the arguments didn't hold." And he says, "Ha." So at this point, Kraut had probably deleted his YouTube channel out of desperation. But I don't think he had realized that he was wrong fundamentally. I think that will be a process that might happen in the next days or the next month.
Well, do you know are you aware of what he wrote on Patreon?
What did he write on Patreon?
Hold on a minute. Let me see if I can find this. It was, if I paraphrase from memory, it was something like, "It's over. I don't know when or if I will come back.
Yeah.
I think I have turned into a monster over the last 2 months."
Yeah, absolutely. And then he re-specified on his Discord. No, you have the correct quote. I remember that one. And then he re-specified what he meant by monster on his Discord server. And what he meant is that he looks at the strategies that he's been using, and it seems that it goes back 1 year ago in his head, and he's disappointed by the strategies that he's been using. So he might be doing some thinking here on what he's doing on Coach Red Pill recently, but also on Rage After Storm, and possibly back to Edgy Sphinx.
Yeah, more than a year ago. He said 2 months in that Patreon thing. It's obviously longer than 2 months. I mean, this has been a fixation, an obsession of his for, at least since June. I think that's really when it started.
And now, in face of Kraut realizing that, his arguments were worthless anyway, I explained to him, there's a reason why Steven Pinker won't take stance against race, and same with Richard Dawkins, despite the fact that they're on the left. They know that you might have a case against race realism for the morals, but you won't have a case against the facts. It's a losing hand. And Kraut answers, "Well, then maybe someone will come along to have the debate with you. I don't know if I'll be coming back again." And I say, Now is not the time to think about this. Get well and reconnect with real life. Then let me know at any time if you want to have a chat. And he says, I will. Enjoy Christmas with your family.
I think the crucial thing here is that Kraut understands that this was not just a defeat of tactics, but of morals. He had behaved, he had indeed become a monster.
And, absolutely.
This is a righteous victory. It's not just that we had better tactics or better weapons or something. It was right for him to be defeated here.
Absolutely.
Someone's put the Patreon thing up on Twitter here, so I'll just read it out for the sake of accuracy. It's titled, It's Over. I don't know if I will come back or when. I think I have gradually turned into a monster over the past 2 months and I need to go. So that was it. Well, it's very interesting, isn't it? I mean, there are a few details that we missed along the way. One of them is that your video, the live stream, was flagged by his community. And we know by them. Liz Reptile was screenshotted telling people to flag it. Another one would be that his videos were on race realism were downvoted hugely. And I think that's very, very unusual for a YouTuber of his stature. I remember one of them had, I think it was 4,000 upvotes and 5,000 downvotes. That's massive. You know, that just doesn't happen. So I think that would have affected him as well, his morale. But those are just some details that occurred to me that we could have included.
Another event that occurred in all this was that he was, as you described, he was false flag for one of his release. And he was then mirrored by Sargon. Sargon first mirrored by explaining that the false flag emerged from alt-right activists. And following a discussion that Sargon had with you and I, and the alt-type at some point, who joined the Skype call, Sargon withdrew his appellation of the alt-right activist and replaced it with fascist activist.
Mm, yeah, it was a Bulgarian fascist who, incidentally, I've since learned, was apparently instrumental in my doxing in January. That's what he claims. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what he claims.
Yeah.
So he's certainly no friend of mine and not a friend of the alt-right. I mean, he's explicitly said that he's not alt-right, but that's kind of all history now. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah. And it should also be noted that then when my video was flagged also for hate speech, which was, you know, I was just reporting the hate speech of Kraut, but for some reason YouTube considered this hate speech. It was in a sense, but it was a journalistic report about hate speech. Sargon refused to mirror my video, not to my request, because I've always said Sargon does not have a duty to mirror my video. He doesn't have the duty of neutrality in this whole debate, nor does he have the responsibility to look through my 50-minute video, which contains very, very subtle humor, which takes hours to understand. There is no way I would put the burden on the shoulder of Sargon to have checked that video and uploaded it and everything. I didn't want that. Now, still, there was lots of people in the community asking Sargon to mirror it. And as a reaction, Sargon said, I'm out of the drama. I will actually de-mirror Kraut's video because I don't want to be involved one way or another in this drama. And this was followed by not only Sargon doing that act, which is a form of burning the bridges, but also Uzalu and V, who were two close friends to Kraut. They were from the same nucleus of YouTubers. They both published independent videos dissociating themselves from Kraut and his behavior before the leaks came out. Yuzalu was before the leaks came out. V was a little bit after the leaks came out.
Mm. And I suppose that there's also fallout. We can talk about the story of Kraut here, but also the... And I suppose what I would say about that in conclusion is that this is the story of someone basically destroying himself over the course of a year. And God knows why. I don't really know if this happened accidentally or because it was always fated to happen by elements of his character, his nature, and his, I would say, his German nature, by the way.
To think of human cognitions of different type, and the type that he has is the type that I have too. I mean, to reach the level that I've reached in science, you need to be freaking stubborn. But you need tools to tame that stubbornness. Because if you just become stubborn without the tools to get stubborn on the right ideas, you're going to bump on a wall very soon. And the problem with Kraut is he has the kind of autism, if you will, that's needed for a life in academia and science. But he doesn't have the tools to make sure that he's headed toward the truth. And so he lets the people around him guide him. And he continues with his stubbornness, which is probably innate. And that drives him in the wrong direction. But you can see in the way he left YouTube that this is an all or nothing thing for a crowd. He privatized all of his videos. He didn't just privatize the alt-right series. That's what you seem to describe as the German mentality. That's actually how I perceive it personally. It's like, oh God, I was wrong. I need to erase everything.
Yeah, I need to self-destruct.
Yeah.
Like consciously self-destruct as opposed to unconsciously self-destruct over the course of a year. He now needs to sort of blow himself up.
Yeah.
And because I think to be more fair to him, I think he's very, very embarrassed. And he doesn't want any, because he sees this as that he has disgraced his character. It's not just that he made a mistake with those four videos or five.
And I would say that's a positive aspect of this whole story. This is telling me something about Kraut. This guy has actual morals. And he may have been blinded for months, but he's still looking at himself and he's still willing to say, maybe I'm a piece of shit. A real psychopath that doesn't care about this kind of thing would just go through. He would just rush through the crisis. Kraut is a very sensitive human being. And I say that in the positive sense, in the sense that he's still willing, after all these months of stubbornness, to say, yeah, maybe I was wrong. And it's time that I isolate myself and think about it.
So do you believe, it sounds like I know that some people hearing those words that you just said would say that you're falling for a trick. That he's just pretending. What's really happened is that his ego has been hit, he's been humiliated, and now he's even angrier than ever. And he's just going away and he's going to plot his revenge.
Maybe he will. But then what makes him, when he comes back, if he does, he's a new YouTuber. And, you have to give the benefit of the doubt to a guy that just privatized 2 years of video history that he could have still monetized, by the way, because there's still people ending up on these videos, even if it's through the random YouTube clicking. And you have to give the benefit of the doubt. This is a guy, yes, you describe it as an ego problem, yes, but it's not bad to have an ego. It's a sign that you still care about what you produce. So I don't see it as a bad thing. And does he already have a plan to come back? I don't know. But when he comes back anyway, he's a new guy. And he has to show that he won't commit the same mistakes that he's committed. I'm enthusiastic about it. Whether he comes back or not, I wish him the best personally.
Yeah, I think I broadly agree with you. I think that he is a ferociously moralistic guy. And I think he hasn't been given the tools to deal with, real life. Basically, I think he's probably had a very sheltered upbringing, very rigid. In fact, now that I think of it, he said that one of his videos. And I think that he's emotionally stunted as well. I don't think he knows how to deal with his own limitations. He doesn't. His ego is absolutely monstrous, or was.
Absolutely. And I've seen it's good to have crashings in your life before the big crash. And it might be true that Kraut has been both in a very controlled and very protected environment. And so I don't know if he's experienced many drawbacks in his life of the massive kind that he now sees. That is a question for his personal psychology, and I may never know the answer, but it's a curiosity that I have, yes.
Yeah, some people are saying that he was beaten or abused as a child. I don't know anything about that. I haven't heard anything about that. I wouldn't want to assert that without evidence. It wouldn't really surprise me. I do think that he is not psychologically normal. I think that, as I said to in the Aidan Paladin stream a few hours ago, I think that a psychologically normal person would have withdrawn, would have stopped this sooner, like pretty soon. They would have done it for a few weeks and or a few days even. And then they'd have realized, okay, this is a bad strategy. It's not working out for me. I'm making a fool of myself. But he just went on and on and on. And that tells me that there's something not right about him. Now, that's not the end of the world, but it is something serious that he needs to really examine in himself.
Yeah. And now one big question for the future of this community is what are we going to do in the non-Kraut world? Because a lot of my schedule was built around the scheduling, the releases of Kraut. And so I'm wondering about you too. I know that you don't rely on Kraut responses video as much as my growth does. But what are you headed for next year in terms of video? Are you taking a direction?
Oh God, that's the Kraut videos. The whole thing makes up 5 videos for me. I did the initial one about, and that's another thing we didn't talk about. That's another part of the story, is that after his attack on Rage, I did a long video talking about him and the Warski stream, called the Rotten Skeptic Community. That was the title. Oh no, it was called A Storm in a Teacup. That's what it was titled. So that's something we could have mentioned. And then I did the 4 video responses to his videos. So that's all for me. It's not a huge thing for me. And indeed, when I did the 4th one a few weeks ago, whenever it was, I was honestly bored. It was like, God, this is just, it's like shooting fish in a barrel. And it feels just vindictive. I don't think, so no, for me, this is not a huge thing in terms of my own output. And that's another thing altogether. Yes, there will be changes on my channel next year, but it's got nothing to do with this. What I would like to talk about, I mean, I'm sure, for what it's worth, I'm sure that you'll have material. It always happens. You know, you think, oh, what am I going to do now that this thing's over? But then, of course, you know, the world keeps changing and it keeps throwing up things and people keep challenging you and so on. So I'm not worried about your channel. No. But before we end, I think it would be interesting to talk about how this reflects on the skeptic community. Several people, well, what would be your initial thoughts on that?
Good question. Because I've never really considered the skeptic community as a natural community. The skeptic community emerges, it's like the ghost of atheism on YouTube. And of course, atheism was a big thing. Militant atheism and debunking videos was a big thing in the early days of YouTube. Enough so that a lot of these people were considering themselves and self-identifying as skeptics. Of course, you cannot remain neutral in politics for much long before you have internal group breakings. And so the first breaking that happened, in my view, was Atheism Plus. So a bunch of leftists who said, hey, we don't want just atheism or skepticism. We want these things to be accompanied by an advancement, this kind of regressive or progressive view of human rights and women's rights and basically the advancement of the causes of the left. So that was the first division that occurred in the atheist community, where people like Rebecca Watson were headed more toward feminism. And they were like, oh, yeah, I don't believe in God, but I also have other beliefs that, in fact, may be more important than the fact that I don't believe in God. So that was the first great clash in the skeptics community. The second great clash may be localized around the axis of Sargon of Akkad and Thunderfoot. So essentially, the skeptic community term had been enlarged at that point to include people like Sargon of Akkad, who are mostly on the moral side of things. I don't think that Sargon is a debunker of bad science, like the classical skeptics were. And so, yes, Sargon is a debunker, but he's a debunker of moral ideas and of feminism. And so the second clash that occurred, that shook the skeptic community, is when Thunderfoot started seeing that, oh, the involvement of people like Sargon in ideologies was making him uncomfortable. Now Thunderfoot said that he was leaving the skeptic community because of a joke on the live stream about a murder that had just occurred. I don't think that the joke itself is what pushed Thunderfoot out. I think that he was starting to feel a rift between his left-wing and classical skeptic views and the direction that people like Sargon were taking, at a more center and even open to interacting with the center-right and the right. And there you add a second riff, which we could call the second peel of the onion. The first peel of the onion being the extremist leftist who were interested in atheism plus. The second peel of the onion being the liberal Thunderfoot type people who are leftists because they like the state anyway, because the state employs them. And so they like the maintenance of a big scientific system produced by the state, and they don't have a problem with it. And then you have Sargon of Akkad left at the center. So what is this all, what is the whole Kraut even playing along those divisions? Where was Kraut lying in all this? Well, Kraut was a weird observation. He was a weird data point in this onion that I've presented, because he was an anti-immigration leftist. He was the next SJW, after the SJW have been ridiculed. He was the inner layer of the onion that was surviving the ridicule of the ridicule of feminism, and he was a realistic future for a sort of left on YouTube.
Yeah,
that future just died yesterday.
Yeah, that is a very interesting way to put it. One person I read said that he was he really is a degenerate who didn't want Islam, or doesn't want Islam in Europe, because Islam would stop him from being degenerate.
Oh yeah, there's this classical view, and when I think of my book and when I think of the possible domination of humanity by non-genetic computer, reproductive pieces of computer and information on hard drives, dominating humanity, I can't help but think that the people who would be most protected against such invasion are those who refuse to do science and who refuse to investigate reproductive science in particular, and that the best people for this are the extremist Catholics and Christians in general, and the Muslims. And so I can't help but think that the presence of a highly motivated religious people, whether it's the Muslims or the Christians, may actually save us from digging too much into a science that could destroy us one day.
Right, okay. Well, I suppose that it would be fitting to end with some speculations about the skeptic community. I have read several people saying that this is basically the end of the skeptic community because it has been so disgraced and humiliated by this turn of events. Well, one thing that we've also got to mention is the Kilroy Conference.
Yeah.
Because it has suffered some, you know, blowback from this, or repercussions, well, shockwaves, that's the word. It suffered from shockwaves from this debacle. And I know that several people, Jeff Holliday was going to speak at, we haven't mentioned Jeff Holliday. I don't think we've mentioned him yet.
If you tell me that Jeff Holliday is speaking at a freedom conference, there's something wrong with the state of the world. This is a leftist bully. I mean, this guy has nothing to say about freedom because he doesn't even know what it is.
Well, he's another degenerate. He's lost in his degeneracy. And then there's, I think Woz Lee is going to speak at Kilroy. I'm not sure about that. Base Mama was the co-organizer of Kilroy and was involved in this server to some extent. I don't know if she was aware of the doxing. I have no idea. But the Kilroy event now seems to be sort of imploding. And I'm not vindictive towards them. I don't want that to happen. But it does seem to be happening to some extent. I know that the other co-organizer, Dave Cullen, has apparently dropped out of it.
Yeah, I read this letter.
So it's, and the skeptic thing, you know, when I had Sargon on Millennial about 2 weeks ago now, he said that the skeptic community was in great condition, and he cited the Kilroy event being fully funded as evidence for that. You know, that they'd got all the tickets necessary to fund the event, and that was his thing. And it was obvious that he saw the Kilroy event as a sort of jewel in the crown of the skeptic community. So, but now it seems to be falling apart to some extent. I don't know if it will still go ahead. Maybe it will.
I mean, I was worried about Kilroy involving Based Mama at all. I'm even more worried knowing that she's now the only co-organizer left and that Dave Cullen is essentially leaving her alone. As the head of this, she is probably unable to do a true conference about freedom of speech. She might do a conference. It might become a kind of leftist YouTube conference. But it is very disappointing from an intellectual perspective. It doesn't seem that these people have any idea what they're doing. And personally, I don't expect a great future for this conference unless drastic changes occur. What they need is someone with balls, and it doesn't have to be a man, but someone who has balls and intelligence to drive forward a good platform that will encompass all of the major mainstream subjects of liberty today. But they don't seem to be headed toward this. This seems to be, and this is what Kilroy has been anyway. It's a reaction to other YouTube events being, how could we say, too mainstream for the politicians of YouTube. And so Kilroy could have been an alternative. But don't call it a freedom of speech conference if you don't... first, if one of your co-organizer is part of a doxing server, if another of your speaker, Jeff Holliday, uses Twitter regularly, completely drunk, making abusive, verbally abusive statements to me and to all sorts of other people, these people...
And he was involved in the demonization of Rage After Storm. Back when this all started.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he was in the Warski stream.
Okay.
Yeah.
This doesn't look like a freedom conference to me.
Yeah. So I suppose what I'm just getting to is the idea that the whole thing, that whole community are sort of fucked at the moment. And I don't know whether they can recover because... they've been shown up as ideologues and bullies and corrupt, dishonest, and shallow. So it's not what they pretended, it's not what they claimed to be. You know, they claimed to be objective, rational, and all the rest of it. And no, they're not. They're very flawed human beings who critically are not aware of their flaws. You know, they pretend to be exactly the opposite of what they actually are. Absolutely. So I find that very interesting. And again, it's something that I have long suspected about people who are militant atheists or people who are militant logicians, is that they are lying to themselves, that they're pretend they would like to be totally logical, and they would like to be happy with a godless universe and all that, but actually they're not.
Oh yeah, I think there's something missing in the militant atheism of Dawkins, and the answer has to come from a sort of moral framework or political framework. And so I think it would be a good idea to abandon the concept of a skeptic community and say we are people arguing on the political axis, and do just like there are people on the left, there are people on the right, but let's not disguise our personal moral preferences into a search for the truth. Because when Jeff Holliday tells me that he's totally for the fact of forcing parents to vaccinate their kids against their consent and to deprive them of school if they refuse, this is a moral stance on liberty. It's not Jeff being the good scientist and making good scientific analysis. There is no data in the world that will force you to accept that the state puts something against your will under your skin. That's a moral decision. And so let's label things correctly. They're on the left, we're on the right.
Yes, I think that would be a very good place to end this conversation. So I think we've explored this very thoroughly. I hope that people at home find this interesting. I've given this video, even though it's part of Millennial, I've given it a special title so that people who are interested in this debacle will be able to find the video. Well, thank you, Jean-François. This is the first time you've been on my channel. It's been a pleasure, and I hope it won't be the last time you're on my channel.
I'm always up, and it's been a pleasure for me too.
Excellent. All right, this has been very enjoyable. I mean, this is a very interesting story, not just because of the events themselves, but obviously because of the ramifications, the meaning of the events. And it also makes a good story because it's one character at the center of it all, but it has all these shockwaves.
Absolutely. I think there will be effects in many years of what happened in the last week.
I agree. Okay, well, let's leave it there. So thank you, Jean-François. And thank you to everyone for listening. I will see you tomorrow night. And it is, hold on a second, let me refresh my thing here. Oh, yes, okay. So I've got On the Offensive, The Iconoclast, Westward Thought, and Daniel Casimir on tomorrow night. So I'll see you then. Once again, thank you, JF, and thank you to everyone at home for listening. See you later.